I'm so excited to share with you that the doors are officially open for my first ever phone-free event that's happening in Los Angeles, California on February 28th at Mudwater Gather in Santa Monica, with the option for you to dive even deeper on March 1st. Now look, this event is about you. It's about you building connections and community and us all really bringing this analog revolution to life and reminding our hearts and souls what we truly crave most, what nourishes our being, which is co-regulating with other humans, having our mirror neurons dance together, sharing experiences together, but also learning together. So on top of all the community and connection possibilities for you, there's also an incredible lineup of speakers. I've got internationally renowned nervous system expert Sarah Baldwin, Nike master trainer Brandon Collingsworth talking about purpose and meaning, and Mandy Balak, who's the president of the Gathering Festival, which is one of the largest marketing and branding conferences in North America. So we're going to be diving deeper into what does the future look like to walk alongside technology and use technology as a tool. Now look, if you want to dive even deeper, there's limited space for a VIP dinner on the Saturday night. And if you want to go even deeper, if it's aligned for leaders, coaches, therapists, entrepreneurs, branding, marketing, whoever is called, there's a mastermind on the Sunday morning with even more limited seating. And that's going to be about what does the future look like to create in this world with technology. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, you want to find out more and save your spot, go to markgroves.com/future. I can't wait to see you there.
If you don't give your brain the stimulus it needs, it'll seek entertainment elsewhere in the form of distractions, in the form of daydreaming, in the form of mind wandering. Look at it like this. If you're driving in your neighborhood and you're going slow, are you really focused on driving? No, right? Because if you're going really slow, people now are doing, they're texting, they're checking their makeup, they're singing music, they're drinking their coffee. There can be five things when you're going slow. But let's say you're F1, you're driving, you're taking hairpin turns and 200 miles an hour or whatever. Are you checking your text messages? Are you thinking about the dry cleaning? Are you trying to sip some coffee? No, what are you doing? You're focused on just two things, what's in front of you and the act of driving. Same thing with faster readers. When you're going faster, you have no time to distract yourself, to think about other things, to do anything else other than focus on the act of reading and what's in front of what you're reading itself. And because you have better focus, you have better comprehension, which means you also have better retention also. So the focus gives you the comprehension. So the speed leads to focus. The focus gives you the understanding.
400th episode. This to commemorate, to celebrate, to do all the things. I can't think of a better guest than you, Jim Quick, for this episode. So thanks for being here.
Mark, it's a real honor. I'm still looking forward to this conversation. Thank you, everybody who's tuning in to this, this brainy talk and training.
I love it. The brainy talk. Well, I think about this might be the delineation where over the first 399 episodes, perhaps there has been an experience of my memory decline and now it will be the uprising. I will be the phoenix rising from the ashes. So your work is so incredible and obviously relatable to everybody. I'm curious in your observation because you have are you in 194? Country. Is that right? How many countries?
Yeah, we have students in every country in the world. So we get a lot of feedback. We have the largest academy of brain optimization and accelerated learning. So people can learn how to have their best, brightest brain and learn how to read faster, improve their memory, focus, flow, all, everything that makes their life more productive, perform better, give them more peace of mind, for sure.
Yeah, who doesn't want more of that? Who doesn't want, who wouldn't have wanted that younger? Because when I was young, I remember having extra teaching on reading comprehension, but no one was teaching me how to retain things.
Right. Yeah. School is an interesting place to teach you subjects like what to learn, math, history, science, but there are virtually no classes on how to learn. There's no class called focus or concentration. There's no class called memory. I wish I thought it should have been the fourth R in school. They teach you what reading, writing, arithmetic. Obviously, spelling's not one of them. But what about what about recall? What about retention? Socrates said learning is remembering. So I think the number one skill to master in the 21st century is our ability to learn rapidly. An individual or a team's ability to learn rapidly and translate that learning into action is the ultimate competitive advantage. Because if you can learn how to learn, focus, understand, think, read, comprehend, retain, what can you apply that to? everything. You could apply it towards manifestation or money or martial arts or music or Mandarin, you know, marketing. Everything gets easier, you know, when you can learn how to learn. So I think today our number one wealth building asset is our brain. And, you know, it's not like it was thousands or even hundreds of years ago where our value in society was more brute strength. Today it's our brain strength. It's no longer our muscle power, but it's more our mind power. And the faster you can learn, the faster you can earn. Because knowledge today is not only power, knowledge is profit. You know, there's a divide between those who have and those who don't have, but there's also a gap between those who know, hey, they have insights, you know, and access to information or data or knowledge, and those who don't. And those people who have access and learned all that information, they can make better decisions. There's a quote in my book, Limitless, that says, life is a letter C between the letters B and D. B stands for birth, D stands for death, life C, choice. And our lives are the sum total of all the choices we've made up to this point. And I believe truly to everyone listening that these difficult times, they could distract you. These difficult times can diminish you, or these difficult times, they could develop you. But we decide, right? And there are certain choices that you can make upstream. And, you know, I think focusing on the topic we're talking about today could have a dramatic impact on people's mental health, their physical health, their career, their ability to parent and support their kids, and so much more.
Yeah, that ability to gain knowledge, but gain it quickly. I feel like that obviously is important throughout history, right? Because you make better choices if you have more data points going into the choice that you're making. Yeah. But on top of that, we have so much information that we're engaging with that it would be great. I mean, first, is the information we're consuming actually valuable and aligned with what we want to create? But two, like, do you see people retaining information less? Like the skill of learning, is in your experience, obviously not in your centers because they're there to learn, but like in your experience, are people getting better at this or not?
So the amount of information is doubling at dizzying speeds, right? You know, with Moore's Law, and I was doing a program at Google. So we do a lot of corporate training, helping them to master information overload and focus and perform better cognitively. And we do these mental fitness programs, right? And it's interesting, like the chairman there has his quote, the previous chairman said, the amount of information that's been created since the dawn of humanity, since humans walked the planet to the year 2003, which is only what, a couple decades ago, that amount of information now is created every 2 days today. And so the amount of information is increasing, but how we learn it, you know, hasn't really changed a whole lot. And that growing gap creates stress. It creates anxiety. Mm-hmm. They call it information anxiety. And symptoms are like higher blood pressure, a compression of leisure time, more sleeplessness. And, you know, I could feel people, I hallucinate a number of people listening or like nodding their heads like, yes. So, in Limitless, I open with the four supervillains of the mental apocalypse that are driven by technology. And the first one is digital deluge. So that's the information overwhelm. But the second one is something called digital distraction, which is how do you maintain your focus? And focus is so key, you know, as a parent, as an entrepreneur, in your career, just to get your life, you know, forward. But how do you maintain your concentration in a world full of rings and pings and dings and app notifications and social media alerts? We were talking about this before we started recording, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when you're on social media, all the likes, shares, comments, you get this dopamine flood, but it drives you to distractions. That's why we, you know, for the overload, we teach people, you know, how to read faster, learn faster. For digital distraction, we teach people how to focus and get in those flow states. The third one I term digital deduction, just to keep the D's. So digital deluge, digital distraction, digital deduction, which is, I saw a study that said that this generation is the very first generation where they're performing worse on some cognitive tests around logic and their ability to ration. And part of it attributed to technology, because technology is doing a lot of the thinking for us. You think about all the algorithms, it's kind of feeding us like what to eat and recommendations or how to get from here to there. Remember when we had to go from here to there, we used to have to like we'd have to develop and flex our visual spatial intelligence. There's a study I quote in Limitless about Oxford. I was studying with London cab drivers, and they would have to study for years all the streets, you know, all the maps, and part of their brain was more developed in their hippocampus, because it's, you know, there's this quote in neuroscience that brain cells that fire together, they wire together. So it's just more dense. And it's interesting though, but now we don't have to, because you have it on your phone, you know, some kind of maps that tells you how to get from here to there. So we don't have to exercise it. And the last one, so that's why we teach thinking, like critical thinking skills, problem solving skills, creativity skills. And then finally, the fourth supervillain, which we were talking about off camera, was digital dementia. And yeah. Digital dementia is a term in healthcare, and it basically states the high reliance on technology, not only to think for us, but to remember things. I mean, you think about your phone and how it keeps your to-dos, or it keeps your schedules, it keeps phone numbers, right? I mean, Mark, how many phone numbers did you know growing up?
Oh my God. Like, I think about it, I can still spout off some friends' phone numbers today. I probably knew 20.
Yeah. And how many phone numbers currently do you know? Like current numbers?
Like active current numbers? Probably like 4.
Yeah. So you can count on one hand, and that's most everybody. And not that I want to memorize 500 phone numbers.
Yeah.
But it should be very concerning. We've lost the ability to remember one, or a PIN number, or a seed phrase, or a password, or something we just read. I believe two of the most costly words in life sometimes are "I forgot." You think about the consequences of saying, "I forgot what I just read. I forgot what I was going to say. Yeah. I forgot to go to that meeting. I forgot that conversation. I forgot that person's name." Right. So we lose trust. We lose time. We make mistakes. We could hurt a sale, a relationship. But on the other side, memory can make you money. Certainly, when you could easily remember client information or product information, become an expert in your field, you know, getting these books. A lot of people buy books and they sit on their shelf unread and become shelf help, not self help. Right. But the challenge is like, you know, how do you exercise and leverage, you know, your mind to do the miraculous, amazing things that it could do, because your brain doesn't come with an owner's manual, and it's not user friendly. Right. So I wrote Limitless as an owner's manual for the most amazing supercomputer on the planet. The technology has created all the other technology in the world, but digital dementia, you know, is a challenge. And what we know about the brain though, is we've discovered more about the human brain in the past 20 years than the previous 2000 years combined. And I think what we found is we're grossly underestimating our own capabilities, you know, that we could do amazing things. That's why I wrote the book called Limitless. We could redraw the borders and boundaries of what's possible. And we could do these things because we just weren't taught, you know, and I know this. If people have seen me on stage, I'm in front of a good 200,000-300,000 people a year live. I could be on 3 continents in a week speaking on this topic. But, you know, people invariably, I mean, I'll do this demonstration where we'll pass around a microphone and maybe the first few rows will introduce themselves and I'll memorize their names, or they'll give me a 100-digit number, 100 words, and I'll memorize them forwards and backwards. But I always tell people, I don't do this to impress you. I do this to express to you what's possible, because the truth is every single person listening, they could do things like that, you know, and more, regardless of their age or their background or their career or their education level, their financial situation, their gender, their history, IQ. We could do it. We just weren't taught how to do it, going back to school, teaching us what to learn, but not really how to learn it. And so I want to fill in those gaps, you know, for people at all ages and stages, so they can live a life that they'd really desire and they deserve.
So if I hear you correctly, because the question I was going to ask you is this available to everybody?
Yeah.
And it is. I mean,
It is. I've been doing this.
That's like so much hope in that, because I'm sure people have internalized beliefs like, not me, which...
Yeah, I could tell you, because I've been doing this every day for... I mean, I'm 51. I've been doing this for 32 straight years. And we have students in every country in the world online, and we do all these trainings. So the feedback we get, and we've seen amazing things. And it's, again, it's not because I'm so amazing. It's because you are born with this gift between our ears, you know, this black box. You know, if people are watching this, happen to be watching this on video, I know you have a lot of people listening on audio, but I'm wearing a brain on my shirt. And if we're connected on Facebook or Instagram or whatever, I'm always pointing to my brain in pictures. I'm always wearing a brain shirt because I feel like change starts with awareness. Mm-hmm. And what you see, you take care of. What you're aware of, you take care of. You see your skin, your hair, your car, your clothes, because you know when it's deteriorating, right? It's not up, it's messy. But we don't see the thing that takes care of us, which is our brain. So I just want to just, my mission really is for people to know their brain, to trust their brain, to love their brain, and to use their brain, because it really is use it or lose it. While it's an organ, it acts more like a muscle. And if I put my arm in a cast for a year, it wouldn't grow stronger. It wouldn't even stay the same, right? It would atrophy. Same thing mm-hmm. with mental muscles. And that's what digital deduction, digital dementia is. It's a high reliance on technology to do the thinking or the remembering for us. And so it's always a balance for me with technology. It's like, it makes your life very convenient, but you don't want it to cripple you. Like, for example, an elevator is a form of technology. And if your office or your apartment's on the fifth floor, you can take the elevator and it's very convenient. But then, you know, the opportunity cost is using the stairs and the fitness you would get from repeatedly climbing up those five flights of stairs. Or if you're going to the bank and it's eight blocks away and you call a Lyft or an Uber when you could have walked in and got some more steps in, it's very convenient technology, just like our phones. But I feel like there's has to be some kind of harmony or balance with keeping ourselves physically fit and mentally fit and not high reliance on technology and use it, you know, intelligently.
What do you think is the line? Because that seems like,
yeah,
like, are we going to realize the immense costs that we're actually paying when we're so far down the line of digital dementia and ADHD and anxiety and depression?
Yeah, I would say it's individual, because who am I to say like what people should prioritize? You know, I have this quote that I tweeted the other day. It's just like, the most important thing is to keep the most important thing the most important thing, right? Mm. And the idea here is there's like memes on social media where you see everyone going up the elevator, like it's packed, like it's commuting. And there's just like one kid walking up with his backpack, the stairs. And it's just, those are the choices that we make every single day. Yeah. And I feel like we don't necessarily want to live a life of default, you know, and again, I don't want to memorize the thousands of phone numbers in my phone, but I also want to keep myself mentally fit so I can remember, you know, the things that are most important. And there's certain benefits, just like when people are physically fit, if they're going to walk up a hill or they're going to hike, we all use 100% of our brain. Right. So it's a myth that we use 10% of our brain, but everybody uses it a little differently. And like, just like we use 100% of our body. Mm-hmm. Right. But some people who are more fit, they could go up that hill or that mountaintop like a lot easier with ease and grace and enjoy the process, as opposed to somebody who's struggling, doesn't have the technique or the fitness or the training. And so I just want people to be mentally fit so they can handle, they're more resilient to stress. You know, they have more brain energy to get them through their workday. They're more focused to be there with their kids. Because all of these things are not things we have. These are things we do. Mm. And the challenge is people, we've gotten the habit as a society of I don't know, giving up our sovereignty to a lot of technology. And I'm pro technology. It allows this to happen, right?
Like, right.
You know, this, yeah. I mean,
it has so many positives.
Yeah, very, very much so. But I think everybody has to make an individual choice of where to put their focus, energy, and their time. And, you know, for me, it's a balance. And nothing's perfect. Limitless is definitely not about being perfect, but it is about advancing and progressing beyond what you're either currently demonstrating or what you believe is possible.
Well, people must get so surprised about what they're capable of doing. Like when you do those exercises in front of hundreds or thousands of people, are they just like, what just happened?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like if people looked into my history, it's not that I was like born with these abilities.
No, your story is so compelling. Like, please share the origin of your work.
And I do it because maybe people can identify, because everybody has a different story, right?
Yeah.
For me, when I was 5 years old, the thing that changed my life, right? If there's an inciting moment, I was in kindergarten class. there were these fire engines outside. Everybody could hear it, but nobody could see outside the window because we're only 5 years old, right? We're not tall enough. So everybody grabbed their chairs from their desks. We put it on the windows to be able to see all the commotion, you know, going on inside. And I'm standing on the, just enthralled, because I've, you know, firefighters for me also were like modern day superheroes. You know, they save the day. They have their uniforms. They go towards danger and give people hope and help. But unfortunately, I lost my balance and I went head first into a radiator, rushed to the emergency room, and because I lost consciousness. And my parents said, where it was really noticeable before, when I was very energized, very, very, very curious, very playful, but I just shut down. And I had processing issues. So I had these learning disabilities, and I just didn't understand things the way everyone understood things. Teachers would have to repeat themselves, the lessons, over and over again. And I would learn to pretend to understand, but I never really understood. I had poor focus, poor memory. I had migraines every day when I was 5 years old. Wow. I had balance issues, so I was not very coordinated because of my brain injury. And when I was 9 years old, I remember I was slowing down in the class because I just wasn't getting it, and I was being teased pretty harshly. One day, and a teacher came to my defense. She pointed to me, Mark, in front of the whole class and said, "Leave that kid alone. That's the boy with the broken brain." And that label, you could say, became my limit, because I didn't know I was broken, right? It was just, but then every single time I did badly in school or wasn't picked for sports, which was like every week, I would always say, "Oh, because I have the broken brain." So that became my inner dialogue. And, I struggled all through that until I was 18, and I hit a really rock bottom, and I found a mentor, and I got turned on to brain science and adult learning theory and, you know, ancient mnemonics. And I met a magician that shared with him some of his secrets on how he remembered things. And I just became extremely curious, and I wanted to know, this is answers one question. I want to know, how does my brain work so I could work my brain? And how does my memory work so I could work my memory? Not some ivory tower or white paper, but just like practically in everyday situations. Where are my keys? You know, how do I remember what I just read or what I just heard on a podcast? You know, or how do I learn this subject or skill, you know, more rapidly so I could, you know, be more valuable in my job? It's possible for all of us. And my inspiration was my desperation. But it's interesting, with struggle comes strength, right? With challenge comes change. So I want to remind everyone that's listening, if you're struggling in an area and you're going through a storm, some things we can only learn in a storm, right? And some storms come and they clear our path. But either way, you know, we hear a lot about post-traumatic stress. We don't hear a lot about the other side, post-traumatic growth. And I didn't invent this term, but this is, and I'm sure some of your listeners can identify with this. I'd be curious, they could post it on social and tag us, but it's where you come out of, you went through adversity, you wouldn't wish it upon anybody, but you wouldn't change what happened because of it. You found something. I don't know what it, maybe a mission, you found a trait, you developed a strength, you got clarity on a value or purpose or something. And there's growth that happened through, you know, that challenge. And so, yeah, I mean, there was a large part of my childhood where I wish I didn't have that fall, but yeah, now I wouldn't change anything because it allowed us to, you know, to do the work that we do today.
Well, I think about how many people have the self-belief of some sort of limitation about their mind or who they are or their learning disability or the whatever it might be, that you, through walking that path and then discovering the limitless possibilities of the brain, have liberated through that. And for people listening to this or watching this, that will be liberated through the experience of, like, your story is, they can't say I can't because you did. So it's like, it's disproven. So like the labels that we hold for ourselves about our brain, like, is that what you confront most often with someone's self-perception and their capabilities with their mind?
I feel like it falls in one of three categories or a combination of three. So if people feel limited, then you control the controllables. And so when I'm coaching individuals and I'm listening for what's holding them back, and it's always one of three things. And so I call it the limitless model. If people imagine a Venn diagram, three intersecting circles that overlap, kind of like Mickey Mouse, two ears and a face, right? The three M's, that really will be help you become more limitless in terms of in a relationship, in your more in your health and wellness, in your income, your impact, your happiness, your reading speed, whatever it is. Three M's, and it's your mindset, your motivation, and the methods. So you can imagine mindset is one of the ears, motivation is one of the ears, and the faces are the methods. Now, most people want to jump to how, which are the methodologies. Mm-hmm. How do you invest? How do you start a business? How do you lose weight? How do you have a fulfilling relationships? How do you read faster? How do you remember names? How do you learn a language? Whatever. But I also realized before I turned in Limitless, you know, the book is, you know, one of the top brain optimization accelerated learning books. We sold over 1 million copies the first couple of years. We donate We donate all the, I say that though, because we donate all the proceeds to charity. We've built schools in Ghana, Guatemala, Kenya, for nonprofits, for villages that didn't have schools, and clean water and medicine. And then also, for Alzheimer's research, for women. Women are twice as likely to experience Alzheimer's than men. And I'm very passionate about this because I lost my, when I was going through my learning challenges at 5, 6, 7, I lost my grandmother, who was like my hero. She took care of me and she passed of Alzheimer's when I was 7. Yet women are twice as likely to experience Alzheimer's, and yet most of the research is done on men and treatment on men. So we fund a lot of that, you know, that research because we're excited, you know, about the potential to, I'm very optimistic, you know, in terms of brain aging and what we could do. But going back to this, when I was writing the book, I was about to hit send to my publisher, and I asked myself a question. I was like, well, 100% of the people who read this book, you know, get the results they're hoping for. And my honest answer was no, because a lot of people, because the book was all in methodology. It was like a textbook on how to focus and how to change your habits and how to memorize everything. But I realized a lot of people know what to do, but they don't do what they know. And why don't they do what they know? It's either their mindset or their motivation. So if you think about like a box, we'll make this like a masterclass for everybody because this is your 400th episode. And I really want to pour into everybody. If you feel like you're stuck in a box, so if Limitless is about advancing and progressing, the opposite is just being stuck. So where do you feel like you're stuck in a box? And I really want people to think about this. You don't have to share it, but where are you not making progress in your life? Is it in your relationship? Is it in your health? Is it your energy levels? Is it your reading speed? Maybe you feel limited. You can't read any faster or remember any more, right? Or your income. That box, by definition, is three-dimensional, right? And the three forces that contain that box are the same three forces that will liberate you out of that, out of that container. And that those three dimensions are mindset, motivation, and methods. So to answer your question, mindset, if we're going to address first, are the set of assumptions and attitudes you have about something. So you can learn a great method on making money, right? But if your mindset is money is the root of all evil, money doesn't grow on trees, in order to make money, you have to hurt people, that's your set of assumptions, your attitudes about money, you're still going to be stuck in that box, even if you know what to do with the methods, right? Mm-hmm. And so even at events that I'm talking, that I was mentioning before, I do these demos and I teach, people invariably, Mark, pull me aside afterwards or before I go on stage and say, Jim, I'm so glad you're here as a memory coach. I'm just too old. I'm really stupid. I have a horrible memory. And I always say the same thing. And I'll say it to everyone listening. Stop. If you fight for your limitations, you get to keep them. Mm. If you fight for your limits, they're yours, right? Your brain is this incredible supercomputer. Your beliefs, your self-talk, your thoughts, that's the program it's going to run. So if you say to yourself, I'm not good at remembering people's names, you will not remember the name of the next person you meet because you program your supercomputer not to, right? And your mind is always eavesdropping on your self-talk, right? This whole like Henry Ford, if you believe you can or believe you can, either way, you're right. And I just think that, and that's not to say you have a negative thought and it ruins your life any more than eating a donut will ruin your life. But if you eat that donut 30 times a day, every single day, there's going to be a consequence. Right. Yeah. Same thing with those negative thoughts, you know, and so something simple to do. If you find yourself saying, I don't have a great memory, you know, you have the awareness that you're saying it, and then just add a little pivot at the end. Like add a little word like yet at the end. I don't have a great memory yet. It just opens up the possibility and the potential, right? Because the words that we have, that we say to ourselves has an effect on our nervous system. So that's the mindset. And certainly people do have beliefs that they're too old, they're not smart enough. And what I know is there's no such thing as a good or bad memory or good or bad brain. There's a trained brain and an untrained brain. There's no such thing as a good or bad memory. There's a trained memory and an untrained memory. And unfortunately, in most school systems, they don't train you. Like going to your kid or teammate or your spouse saying, say, study this, focus. This is important, focus. That's like going to somebody saying, play the ukulele, who's never had any class or training on how to play the ukulele, right? It's just assume we know how to be able to do those things. And but even when it comes to reading and reading faster, if it's a skill that you learn, because no one was born with the ability to read, when was the last time people took a class called reading? How old were you? 6?
Never.
Yeah. So the difficulty demand has increased a lot, but fundamentally we're still learning it. Like this last time we were taught, we haven't upgraded those skills. And so, you know, mindset is a big deal. And, you know, how we get over it is like there are a number of ways of reframing those beliefs. And there's a lot of tools and EMDR and tapping and hypnosis. You know, for me, I like to get people doing things they never thought they could do. So if I could teach somebody how to memorize the periodic table or count to 10 in Japanese or, you know, memorize a grocery list forwards and backwards very quickly, then it's like, oh, what else could I do if I could do that? And then the last M besides mindset and methods is you can have a limitless methods. You've upgraded your skills to do the things you want to do and a mindset that says it's possible. I could do it. I deserve it. Right.
Yeah.
But you might not be the second M, which is motivation. You might not be motivated to get out of that box. You might not be motivated to lose that weight or to be in that relationship or to make that money or to read faster, right? So motivation is a key. So you know, we break out the book into 4 M's, the section on mindset, mastering your mind, section on really the strategies for overcoming procrastination, which motivation, and then all the methodologies on how to focus, read faster, and so on. And then the last one in the new updated versions on momentum, how to use these three forces to accelerate and, you know, have less friction in your life and more velocity. But motivation is interesting because, you know, everyone knows the methods. They know they should meditate or journal,
yeah,
out or eat the best brain foods ever or prioritize their sleep. But if they're not doing it, if they're self-sabotaging, then it's a mindset issue. They don't believe they deserve it or they're not capable of doing it. Or if they're procrastinating, that's a motivation issue. And we have a simple formula we talk about, 3 steps for limitless motivation, how to get yourself or somebody else to do the things that they need to do.
I mean, who doesn't want to get themselves or especially somebody else? I was like talking to a friend the other day. It's like, I need my son to do this. They could use, what are the 3 steps?
So the formula everyone could write down is the letter P times E times S3. P times E times S3. So I always like to, as a coach, bring it back to something practical, pragmatic. So think about something that you know you should do, but you're not doing it. We could use exercise as an example, right? We know that as your body moves, your brain grooves. Exercise is probably one of the most studied ways of improving your brain power. Because when you exercise, you create dopamine, serotonin, endorphins, which is good for cognitive health. When you exercise, you create a BDNF, which is brain-derived neurotrophic factors, which is fertilizer for neuroplasticity, fertilizer for your brain to grow. But if you're not doing that exercise, maybe let's address it, P times E times S3. The P stands for purpose. All right. And I don't mean your life's purpose. It could be, but I mean having a reason, because reasons reap results. Even when you want to remember someone's name, a lot of people don't have a reason consciously where they feel it. Meaning if you even just ask yourself before you meet somebody at an event, why do I want to remember this person's name? Maybe it's to show the person respect or make a new friend, get a referral, practice these things I learned on Mark's podcast, right? Then you're more likely to remember it because it goes from your head to your heart to your hands. That's a success sequence. If you have an idea in your head, but you're not acting with your hands, check in with the second H, which is your heart, which is a symbol of emotions. Because we're not logical. We're more biological, right? And like when I mentioned dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, endorphins, we're this neurochemical feeling soup, and we don't do things unless we feel something, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I would remind everyone for purpose, you could have all the intellectual reasons why you work out and still not do it because you don't feel it. I'll give you an example. a few years ago, I saw somebody on the street in my neighborhood, and I don't know if anyone can resonates with this, but you recognize them, but you don't really know who it is or where you know the person from. And that's really weird for me, who's memorized like tens of thousands of people's names, right? But when he opened up his mouth to say hi, I knew it, right? Because I recognize his voice, but he looked completely different. This guy, he looked younger. Wow. The backstory is this person was the most unfit person that I knew, right? Our collective friend group knew. And he took almost pride in his vices and being unhealthy, right? It was kind of his identity. And I was like, I have to say, you look amazing. You're like, what are you doing? He shares all of everything he's doing. And I'm like, okay, we've been telling you to do that stuff for years. You know, he's like, yeah, but he's like, tell me a story where he was on a business trip. He came back home and his daughter, this little girl, was just crying hysterically. And he found out that she had a nightmare that he died, that her father died and wasn't there and then he found purpose, you know, because that instantly it went from going something that was in his head to his heart, and he made the change. So in order to motivate anybody, you have to tap into a reason that they have. If you want to motivate your kids to study, you know, you have to make it relevant and rewarding around something they feel. If you want to get yourself to do something that's hard, you have to have a reason. Now, you could have a limitless purpose and still not get out of that box. Or like, if people have seen pictures with me online on social media with Elon or Oprah or Branson or whoever, people always ask like how we connected and bonded. And I'll tell you, 100% of those people, we bonded over books, a love of reading, a love of learning, right? Because they are where they are, because I got to play through happenstance, not by like quality of my own, bridge with Warren Buffett at the shareholder meeting. He was just walking in the mall, and it's just kind of like, you know, I said, I had to ask him about reading, because I heard this idea, this story that he reads a lot. He's like, yeah, 500 pages a day. Right.
I'm because sorry, what? He reads 500
pages. He reads 500 pages a day.
And he's like 89, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, this was like 10 years ago. But yeah, I don't know what he's doing now. But the idea here is, if somebody has decades of experience and they put it into a book.
Yeah.
And you and I could sit down and read that book in a few days. Could download decades in the days. That's the biggest advantage, period, there is. Right. The average person reads maybe 1, 2, 3 books a year. But if you can even just do one book a week. Right, we have a whole community globally that just reads, 52 books a year. Right, you can have a PhD, MBA in any subject. So the idea here, and also reading is the best exercise for your brain. People always want to know what app or reading is to your mind. Exercise is to your body. It just is, and we could talk about that. But you know, so we like to get people reading at least one book a week.
But that's insane. I listen to books, but now I'm like. I listen to a lot of books, a lot of podcasts, but I actually think, like, when you're saying reading is exercise, I can see that, but I also don't feel like I consume reading as fast as auditory. So I'd love
And so we could talk after this, we could talk about how to read faster. Cause I think most people don't read because they're not good at it.
Same.
You know, I'm not that great at golf, so I don't play very often because it's frustrating.
I suffer from the same ailment.
Right. So, but if you're a great reader and you can focus and, you know, and you go through it and you understand it, then you're just going to do it more. In psychology, they call it the confidence competence loop, that the more competent you get at something, the more confident you are. And because you're more confident, you're going to do it more. So you're going to get more competent. So it feeds. Reading is not something you're born with. You're trained. And it's just about upgrading those skills. But going back to, like, you know, being leaders or readers, right? You read to succeed. When we're talking about, like, how to level up your motivation is we bonded over books. So purpose, like, you might want to apply motivation towards reading or get your kids to read. You need purpose. Like, maybe there's some kind of outcome that you feel. But the E, P times E times S3, the E is energy. So you can have a limitless purpose and know why and feel why you need to read and still not do it, because you know, you and I have, you know, young children, and like my child happens to be teething and keeps us up all night.
Nice.
Right. So I'm not very motivated if I have no energy. If you eat a big processed meal and you're in a food coma, you're not gonna be very motivated to work out. So the E in the equation, P times E times S3, is energy. And I just want to leave people with this for energy. You don't have energy. You do it. A big part of first principles for me when I wrote Limitless is turning your nouns into verbs. Because I think we hypnotize ourselves, Mark, sometimes. Not just, there's hypnosis definitely through marketing and media, right? Mm-hmm. And I think this 400th episode, for me, the theme is transcending. Trance end. You're ending the trance. Mm. Ending this trance, this hypnosis that we're in, that we're not enough, that we need to be fixed, that we're broken, that, or something, you know, fear mongering from media or marketing, whatever it is, right? Or it might not be hypnosis from media, marketing, whatever, or peers or family. It could be self-hypnosis. We say to ourselves, like, I don't have energy. I don't have motivation. I don't have focus. These are not things you have, nouns. These are things you could do. So when I teach, you don't have a memory, there's a three-part process for memorizing something. And then what's the benefit of turning it into a verb? It gives you your agency back, right? Because then you don't wake up and say, oh, I hope I have motivation to write my book today, right? Motivation is not something you have. It's something you do. And here's the three-step process. You need purpose. You need energy. So, you know, in the book, we talk about how to optimize your sleep. What are the best foods for mental energy? What are the best supplements with human studies to boost nootropics that boost your focus, memory, you know, brain energy? What's the best exercises to stimulate, you know, energy? So you don't have energy, you do it, you generate it. And then finally, you can have limitless purpose and limitless energy and still not be motivated to do that thing. And I think the other reason why is because you could believe it's possible and have all the energy in the world and still be frozen because that thing is too big. That goal is too big. It's too abstract. It's too intimidating. It's confusing. And a confused mind doesn't do anything. So here's an example. Like maybe if you've never worked out in your life, that's too big of a goal. So S3 stands for small, simple steps. So maybe it's not going to the gym 3 times a week. That's too big. Out of my paradigm and habits, a small, simple step, put on your running shoes. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't get your kids. We have our podcast and we're approaching 400 episodes. And if we had a biological dentist talking about oral health and brain health and beyond brushing, right? We're talking about tongue scraping and oil pulling. And when we're talking about flossing, you know, if you can't get your kids to floss, a small, simple step, S3, floss one tooth. Because no kid's going to stop at one tooth. If you know readers are leaders and you want to read 30 minutes a day, maybe that's too big of a jump and it's too intimidating. A small, simple step, open up the book. Read one line in the book. Because little by little, a little becomes a lot, right? Inch by inch, it's a cinch. Yard by yard, it's just too hard. And how do you find your small, simple step? This is a question I ask myself like 10 times a day. When I want to be more productive and I'm just stalled, I ask myself this question. What is the tiniest action I could take right now that will give me progress towards this goal where I can't fail? What is the tiniest action I could take right now, operative word now, that's giving me progress, I'm getting closer to this goal where I can't fail? And that's how you find your small, simple step. And so maybe you're trying to motivate somebody else to do something, like your kids to floss one tooth, clean their room. That's too intimidating. It's overwhelming. Get them to put one sock in the hamper, right? Yeah. That's a small, simple step. And then little by little, a little becomes a lot. And so, yeah, the three reasons they stall, they have no purpose, they have no energy, or the thing is just too big. So it's really purpose times energy times small, simple steps. You'll have limitless motivation. You know, when you need to be able to tap it.
I feel like people have been waiting forever to figure that out. Yeah. Like the key, because it makes a lot of sense that if you haven't tapped into something greater than you or important to you, then like that's what causes us to change. Usually it's because we hit some sort of motivation that comes from there's an end. We can't go further in the direction that we're going. So we have to create something different or turn around. Yeah. But if you can actually find something that you could tap into, like, you know, when you said that, I immediately just thought of my son. It's like so easy to find motivation for me when I think of him, when I think of like what I'm teaching him, who I'm becoming. The energy part and the teething I relate to. And I'm like getting up and working out and what that does for our brain. Like no matter what, I get up before they do most days I can't predict his wake time, but I try to get up before them so that I can get a workout in and that be a priority. Cause if I don't do it in the morning, it ain't getting done. And all these things about like being able to, I'm still hanging on your mentioning of reading faster because for me, I'm like, oh, that's good. I want to know.
Yeah.
How do I improve the speed at which I read? And do you recommend I listen as I read too? Is that helpful or is that actually not allowing the brain to get its training at the best possible way?
So let's unpack that. So audiobooks, I love audiobooks. I love podcasts. When they do studies in terms of how much people learn listening versus reading something. And when I say learn, I mean understand and retain. Mm-hmm. People who read will get better comprehension and retention. And I think one of the reasons why, Mark, is because usually when people are listening to something, they're doing something else.
Yeah, that's true for me.
You know, you're listening to that audiobook, you might be driving or you might be working out or you might be cleaning the house, right? And then so the challenge is you're trying to multitask and you're switching your attention. So you're not going to understand or retain as much because our focus is split. And so, you know, that's another reason I like to read. And you can, now when I listen to audiobooks, I do it at faster speed. I don't know about you.
So do I.
But here's the thing, you could understand it going that fast, but you can't speak that fast. And so when we're looking to read better, there are a number of strategies, right? And we teach a whole like 21-day program on, and the average increase in reading speed, regardless of your age, is 300%. So basically read something in 20 minutes, it takes an hour. Now, this is
That's
huge
banana.
Because even if you could double your reading speed, the average person reads, has to process information about 4 hours a day for work or for school or whatever, right? Think about the emails or the research or the books or text, whatever you're reading, right? About 4 hours a day. If you could just double your reading speed, you save 2 hours a day. What's 2 hours a day over the course of a year? Right. Or even one, let's make it easy math. 1 hour a day, let's say you save over the course of a year is 365 hours. How many 40 hour work weeks is that? So you divide 365 by 40, about a little bit more than 9 weeks. So 2 months of productivity you get back to saving an hour a day, 2 months. Most people fight to get a couple of weeks off at work, right? Imagine getting 2 months back, just saving an hour a day on something ubiquitous like reading, right? That's why, you know, we do this. The trainings, the speed reading trainings at Nike, Google, SpaceX, Facebook, you know, these in Harvard, these institutions. Now, a few things you could do to read faster. So first of all, I don't want people to believe everything I'm saying. I want them to test it for themselves. So pick up a book, not now, but just for everybody. If you have a book, put a mark in the margin where you're starting. Please, maybe you started the book already.
Limitless, and then, the expanded edition.
Yeah, there you go. It's a perfect book. So one book to help you read, learn, and remember all the other books. but yeah, set your phone and go 60 seconds and just read how you would normally read for 60 seconds. And then when the alarm goes off, put a mark in the margin again where you finished and count the number of lines you read in 60 seconds, right? So that gives you a baseline of how fast you're reading that particular book. And then I'm going to ask you to make a couple of shifts. And I'm going to give you a couple of tips. And then when you're done, go back, pick up where you left off, where that mark is, time yourself for 60 seconds and put a mark in the margin after you use a technique I'm going to share right now. That second number will be about 25-50% greater.
Wow. Right?
And so let's unpack this. There are a number of reasons people read slowly. Number one, lack of education, which we talk about. We just haven't upgraded our skills. It's still that of like a 6-7-year-old. The second one is lack of focus. Right. Have you ever find your mind wandering when you read?
Yeah.
Right. Or you're thinking about other things, you get easily distracted. One of the reasons why is because we're reading too slow. You know, I mentioned we have students in 195 countries online. So we have a lot of data. And most people think if you read faster, your comprehension would go down. Right. But in actuality, on a whole, as a gestalt, the fastest readers tend to have better comprehension because they have better focus.
That's interesting. Because you have to be focused for the speed.
Right. Because your brain is this incredible supercomputer. But when we read, we feed the supercomputer one word at a time. Metaphorically, we're like starving our mind. And if I spoke that slow, I can't because I'm from New York. But if I spoke this slow, what would people naturally do? If we spoke this entire episode, first of all, it would take like, 4 hours if we talk really slowly. But what would happen over time? People would distract themselves. They would think about other things. They would fall asleep. Isn't that interesting? Because of the same exact symptoms people have when they read. They get easily distracted. They think about other things. They fall asleep.
That's so interesting.
Because they're reading it too slow. Right. So if you don't, let me say it in a different way. If you don't give your brain the stimulus it needs, it'll seek entertainment elsewhere in the form of distractions, in the form of daydreaming, in the form of mind wandering. Like, look at it like this. If you're driving in your neighborhood and you're going slow, right? Children slow. Are you really focused on driving? No. Right. Cause if you're going really slow, what people now are doing, they're texting, they're checking their makeup, they're singing music, they're drinking their coffee. There could be five things when you're going slow. But let's say you're F1, you're driving, you're taking hairpin turns at 200 miles an hour or whatever. Are you checking your text messages? Are you thinking about the dry cleaning? Are you trying to sip some coffee? No, what are you doing? You're focused on just two things, what's in front of you and the act of driving. Same thing with faster readers. When you're going faster, you have no time to distract yourself, to think about other things, to do anything else other than focus on the act of reading and what's in front of what you're reading itself, right? And so, and because you have better focus, you have better comprehension, which means you also have better retention also. So the focus gives you the comprehension. So the speed leads to focus. The focus gives you the understanding. And so that's the second obstacle. So lack of education keeps you reading slow, lack of focus, but that's a myth. The faster readers actually have better focus and better comprehension. But the third and fourth one are the ones that I really want to highlight for everybody. Mm-hmm. The third one is something called subvocalization. Now, subvocalization, have you ever noticed, Mark, when you're reading something, you hear that inner voice inside your head reading along with you?
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah, that hopefully is your own voice.
It's an Australian guy.
So if you hear that voice, think about it. Like that voice got there because when you first learned how to read, you'd read out loud. And then maybe parents or teachers were tired of hearing you read out loud. And they said, read quietly to yourself, read silently to yourself. And that's where you said, okay, in order for me to understand it, I have to hear it or say it. If I don't say it out loud, I have to say it inside and hear it inside. And it's been there ever since. Now, the question I want to challenge everybody with is, do you have to say the words in order to understand the words? Like, do you have to say the words New York City in order to understand what New York City is, or computer to understand?
So the thing is,
you're driving again. Like you see a stop sign in the corner. Nobody listening here says stop to themselves every single time. But do they understand what it means? 100%.
Yeah.
95% of everything you need to read are like that's the word stop. You've seen them tens of thousands of times before, those words. You don't have to pronounce it in order to understand it.
That's cool.
And so that's subvocalization. Sub meaning like submarine, under, vocal meaning speech. It's your inner speech, right? And so it's an obstacle to effective reading because if you have to say all the words inside your mind in order to understand them, you can only read as fast as you could speak.
Yeah.
That means your reading speed is limited to your talking speed, not your thinking speed. That's why you can listen to a podcast or an audiobook at 1.5 or 2x because you can't understand it that fast, but you can't speak that fast.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But even if you look at the words in this book, most of the words are filler words like and, there, because, the, like it's like you don't have to pronounce them. They're symbols like punctuation marks. Nobody reads and says, da 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 period da 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 question mark comma right, but they're symbols. You understand what they mean. You don't have to pronounce it. Same with like majority of words. So part of our training over those 3 weeks is there's no quick tip to reduce subvocalization. It has to come through proper training. Some people do like bite their knuckles or they say the alphabet or they count when they read so they can't say the words if they're counting kind of thing.
I'm 100% doing this 3 weeks.
Yeah. It's astonishing. So the course we have, we actually train people methodically to reduce subvocalization. Then they can read by sight, so they're not saying all the words so they can read three times faster.
I'm so excited.
And then the last thing is, so it's lack of education, lack of focus, subvocalization. Fourth obstacle effective reading is regression. Regression is this Have you ever had this experience where you're reading something and you reread like the whole line again or something like that? Regression is the unconscious habit we have of rereading words. And experts say anywhere from 20, 25% or more could be spent unconsciously rereading words, which is very taxing on the eyes. You're going forward and then back and forward and back. Yeah. But also it breaks up the rhythm, but it doesn't help you understand it any better. It's like if you're watching a movie and somebody's sitting next to you and every 30 seconds, they would just kind of rewind. That'd be really annoying. So it kind of breaks it up. And it takes, that movie's going to take twice as long, right? But one of the things that could help you with overcoming the focus issue and regression is using a visual pacer. So what I mean by that is when you're reading, underline, even if you're reading on a Kindle, just you don't touch the screen, you don't touch the book, but if you're using your finger or a pen, or you're not actually marking up the book, you're just underlining it using a visual pacer, going margin to margin, margin, margin. You're not skipping anything, because traditional speed reading will have you like put your finger right down the page, but then you miss big gaps on the left and right, or S forms or Z forms, but you're missing big gaps. That's where you get the gist of what you read. But we train some of the world's top doctors in the world. You don't want your doctor to get the gist of what she's reading, right? That won't be the goal.
The gist of the surgery.
Right. So if you're just underlining the words, not skipping anything, do that when you pick up the book the second time, time yourself for 60 seconds, then count the number of lines you just read in 60 seconds. That number would be about 25-50% greater. Just having a visual pacer. Wow. It could be a mouse on a computer that you're underlining. It could be a highlighter. It could be anything that keeps. And the reason why, first of all, because this is the purpose, because we don't, as adults, we need to know why things work the way they work.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, children do it. Like, you know, we have a 18 month old, and naturally he will underline the words to help him focus until we tell him not to. In traditional education, they'll tell you not to use your finger when they read, right? Number two, we use our finger when we read. So nobody uses their finger when they read the first time. But when I ask you to count the number of lines you just read, everybody will do what? They use their finger to help one, two, point, three, four, because they're using a visual pacer, right? Because it helps you focus. The third reason you use your finger is because your eyes are attracted to motion. Like if something ran across the screen right now, nobody would pay attention to us. They'd pay attention to what moves the most, because it's survival. As a hunter-gatherer thousands of years ago, if you're in a bush and you're hunting lunch, like a rabbit or carrot, whatever your diet is, if the bush next to you moves, your eyes have to look at what moves. Because number one, it could be lunch. Or number two, you could be lunch, right? So either way, what moves? So when your finger's going across the page, you're being pulled through the information as opposed to your attention being pulled apart. But the but another reason, which I think is most interesting, it's how your nervous system is set up. Like, Mark, have you ever tasted a great fresh piece of fruit? Like not something that's been sprayed and waxed and put in a store for 6 months, but like off the vine or at a farmer's market.
Yeah, like a mango. Have you ever,
Have you ever tasted a great tasting peach before?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So in actuality, you're not tasting the peach. Your tongue's not capable of tasting what a peach tastes like. You're actually smelling the peach. But your sense, your mind can't tell the difference because your sense of smell and your sense of taste are so closely linked in your nervous system. You know it though when you're sick. If your nose is congested, what does some food taste like?
Yeah, you can't taste
like bland, right? It doesn't have any flavor because you're actually relying on your sense of smell. Just as your sense of smell and taste are closely linked in your nervous system, so is your sense of sight and your sense of touch. Even with our son, if I take my keys, I say, look at these keys. I shake it in front of him. He'll reach out and grab them. In order for him to see it, he has to like feel it, right? Yeah. And so literally when people use their finger when they read, they'll say something like, I don't know, Jim, I just feel more in touch with my reading than touch, right?
Yeah.
Or here, if people lose their sense of sight, how do you read?
Right.
You braille. Yeah. Using touch, right? So these are all a number of reasons, and there are more, that you can use your finger while you read, and it'll help you to focus and get more comprehension out of it, and certainly help you to read faster. So a big takeaway from this part of it would be leaders are readers. The most successful individuals are there because they learn from somebody else who is an expert, right? And it helped them shave years off in the process. Reading is great exercise to your mind. I like audiobooks as secondary, but I wouldn't replace it with just reading. And then if you use your finger while you read, you'll get through it with better focus, better speed, better understanding. And because of it, you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy it a lot more.
Do you think that one, the accumulation of knowledge that occurs through reading, the practice of doing that, like that providing us with more skills and knowledge in order to create whatever we want to bring into the world ourselves, a skill set, whatever it is, that is also countering all the digital things that you're speaking about, the digital, like the overload of information, the digital, the dementia. Like, is reading the counteraction to this, or like, what is the way that we rescue ourselves from the decay?
So I for the four supervillains, right? You know, for digital deluge, certainly reading faster will help you keep up with the daily. You don't have to read everything, right? You're reading things with an outcome in mind, I assume.
Yeah.
Right. You're studying something to further your career, or your schooling, or you're reading something for just pleasure, right? You're reading fiction reading or something like that. So reading it faster, not frantic fast, you know, even like reading fiction, I read fiction also, you know, pretty much every day. And it's just more enjoyable when you can get through it. And also a picture is worth a thousand words. So when you, instead of just saying the words, you're experiencing the words. Yeah, it's an amazing experience. It's like me, though, trying to explain to somebody what a flower smells like, who's never smelled a rose, right?
Right.
So it's an amazing experience, right? The other part of it is with digital distraction, reading is a great focusing exercise, right? We don't have focus. Focus is a muscle. So as opposed to going on social media and every like, share, comment, cat video, you get this dopamine flood and it drives you to distraction. You flex those distraction muscles. Reading is a wonderful exercise because how you do anything is how you do everything. It's a wonderful exercise to flex your focus muscles. And then you can have greater focus throughout your day, right? If the first thing you do in the morning is pick up your phone, you're distracted, you flex your distraction muscles. You wonder why you can't focus with your kid or on a Zoom call or on an interview or at work.
Right? Yeah.
Because whatever we do repeatedly, we get better at. And so we're rehearsing that all the time. So I think to answer your question, I think reading helps with overload, digital deluge. It certainly helps with distraction because the better you get at it, the better you building the muscle, like meditation. You don't meditate to get good at being quiet, you know, like sitting in a corner somewhere. You meditate because of all the benefits it gives you outside of that meditation, right? We can have more focus and calm and state regulation throughout the day. Same thing with reading. And that focus maps over another thing you need to focus on. You know, digital dementia, certainly it helps as you, as I said, there's no such thing as a good or bad memory. There's a trained memory and untrained memory. Reading is a wonderful way of training your memory, right? And recalling, especially what we train is not just speed reading, it's smart reading. So we teach people how to, even if you're not going to read it faster, how to understand it more, how to remember it. So we have these retrieval practice exercises and everything to improve your memory as you read. And then finally, digital dementia, where we're highly reliant on, digital deduction, we're highly reliant on things to think for ourselves. Reading, I think, is a wonderful way to see the other people's point of view, right? To build EQ, empathy, to be able to see things from other people's perspectives, to be able to hold two opinions in your mind, you know, and kind of go through and analyze something critically and filter for it. So I feel like reading is, I'd rather honestly go a day without eating than a day without reading. It's just, I'm not saying that's for everybody, but, you know, food is information and we feed it into our body. I also feel like what we feed our minds, you know, is extremely important nowadays. So yeah, reading, and just like with your workout, you do it first thing in the morning because it's scheduled. I think people need to schedule their reading because if you don't, I think our calendars is like the number one productivity performance tool we have. But if it's not it, you put your, you know, parent-teacher meetings, your investor meetings, your doctor's appointments, your calendar, but are you scheduling your own personal growth? Are you scheduling your own like learning? So have a to-do list, but have a to-learn list. And on it have, you know, some of the things that you want to learn and read. And then what I would dedicate is like 30 minutes a day of reading. And if it's too big, then start out with 5 minutes, small, simple step, because you'll find, you know, the more you do it, the better you get and the more you'll enjoy doing it. And I think you have to, you know, read what you love until you love reading. Meaning choose things that you really love, and then until you love the process of reading also.
Is there a, because this feels very relevant for me, I meet honestly like hundreds, thousands of people, and I'm curious. I want to be mindful of time too. I'm curious. Is there a simple way, or is it simple to remember names, like to be better at recalling?
Yeah. So I would say, when I do these demos, there's lots of different ways. And in the book, there's many, many different options because everyone learns a little different. I will introduce you to this. So in the new edition of Limitless, one of the highlights that I think is the most important thing in the book is brain types. Yeah. So, and I'll explain how this relates to remembering names and reading. So after 3 decades of teaching, people had optimized their brain and learned faster. I realized not everything's for everybody, just like not every diet's for every single person, right? Everyone's a little bio individual. And just like there's personalized medicine based on a test, like a DNA test, or personalized nutrition based on a microbiome test or nutrient profile test, we created a simple test for personalized learning and performance based on your brain type. And it's a 4-minute assessment, very simple. And I pulled from all kinds of psychology, left brain, right brain dominance, learning styles, multiple intelligence theory, introvert, extrovert, and personality types like Myers-Briggs. We integrated into just a 4-minute assessment, multiple choice. People could take it for free, your listeners, at mybrainanimal.com. And when you do, just pick the multiple choice that resonates with you. But the win for everybody here is I realize it's not how smart you are or how smart your kid is. It's how are they smart? It's not how smart you are. It's how are you smart? And I realize that there are 4 primary ways that people use their brain. And once you understand your brain type, it informs everything. It informs how I parent right now. It informs how I do leadership meetings, how I hire, how I teach, how I learn myself. So the 4 brain types, if you think about code, CODE is your brain code. The C, we made animals to make it fun. It's kind of like which Game of Thrones or Harry Potter character are you, right? The C is the cheetah. And if you're watching this on video, this is the cheetah. So the cheetah's primary trait is action. So like, and Mark, you should listen, like think about like where you would, or someone that you love would fall, what animal they would be. A cheetah's primary dominant trait is action. They adapt very quickly. They have strong intuition. They implement. They'll learn, but they put into play. The O in code, the acronym code are your owls, and their dominant trait is logic. So these people love data. They love facts and they love figures and they love formulas. But they're very logical in their life. The D in there is the dolphins, and the dolphins are your creatives. That's their dominant trait. They are great at pattern recognition. They usually have a vision for themselves or their business that others can't see yet, right? They're very passionate behind that vision. And then finally, the E in code are your elephants, and their dominant trait is empathy. These are your collaborators. These are people that want you to feel seen, feel heard. Now, let me just give you an example. So I've been using this model to coach our one-on-one clients for years. And we put it and made it available to our team. And they all took it. And do you know 100% of our customer service team are one specific animal? Elephants.
What?
High empathy.
Cool. Yeah.
You know, they want people to feel seen. They want them to feel heard and understood. Their success is coming from their success. You know, they're our community builders. My business partner of almost 20 years, she's our CEO. She's a dolphin. She has this vision for our mission. Our CFO, our financial officer, what animal do you think he is? He's the data guy. He's the owl. Right. So it's interesting. And you start seeing this even in pop culture. If you look at like Friends, Joey is the cheetah, just goes through, doesn't think, just acts. Right. You know, Phoebe is the dolphin, the creative songstress, the artist. Right. You have someone like Ross, who's a scientist professor, who's the owl. You have Monica, who always wants to host everything, be the center of, you know, the community group, who's your elephant. But you see this in all kinds of archetype. But the benefit of doing it is when people do take the assessment, once we know what animal you are, we send you strategies on how to read faster based on your brain type. So like cheetahs are skimming and scanning because it's speed. Owls are searching specifically for research and data points, going through and going logically in a logical sequence. Creatives, like the dolphins are visualizing more of what they're reading. The elephants are trying to use empathy to see that expert's or that author's point of view, and whether they're reading fiction or something else, right? But you could use this in sales. If you're selling to an owl, you know, you need case studies, you need logic, right? You need to be able to present, you know, social, for a dolphin, if you're selling to, show them how your product or service fits into their vision for their life. If you're selling to an elephant, great case studies and data and vision, but they need to know you care, because what's more important to an elephant is the relationship itself. Right? That rapport, that trust. So the idea here is it could help you hire, it could help you parent, it could help you to be able to coach, to sell, certainly. But most importantly, it helps you to transform yourself. There's a movie, The Matrix, where Neo meets the Oracle for the first time in her kitchen, the all-knowing, wise Oracle. And I don't think anyone sees this, but right above the door, when he walks in the kitchen, there's a sign and it says, "Know thyself." And I really think, you know, that's why you go to therapy, or you journal, or you go on these meditation retreats, or do plant medicine, or you take assessments, because it gives you an opportunity to know yourself. So I think success comes from having the curiosity to know yourself. And then the second part of success, call it what you want, is the courage to be yourself. Because a lot of people do the inner work and get to know what they stand for, their identity, their values, their beliefs, but putting it into action and having the courage to be that person, you know, in midst of other people's opinions and their expectations and what are they going to think about me, it's a different part of it. But yeah, we created this assessment as a gift.
I love
Your listeners could benefit from it. We're making it complimentary, where we used to charge for it. But I would love for people to actually, you'll get these AI art when you go through it, but then if they post it and then tag us. So, cause I'm curious, like what the majority of your community animal dominant type
That'd be
is.
Really and cool to see. I wonder if they're
and
mostly
then get all the strategies.
Yeah.
And then you get, as my gift, you get all the strategies based on your brain type to remember languages, remember names, to remember how to read faster.
Oh, that's great.
But for remembering names, just a couple things. Remember suave, just be suave. S, you say the name. You meet somebody, they introduce themselves, you say, "Mark, it's wonderful to meet you." You say it, right? That helps you remember it. You use it, but you don't abuse it. Just use it 3 or 4 times in the conversation. It wouldn't be like, "Mark, thank you so much for having me on the show. Mark, what do you want to talk about? Mark, do you have any questions?" Yeah, that would be an abuse. But asking 3 or 4 times. The A is you ask. So especially this works out well for people who have a name that you haven't heard before. Afzal or Ritiger, or like, what can you ask? How do you spell it? Well, where's it from? What does it mean? Who are you named after? Right? They say a name is the sweetest sound a person's ear. So ask about a person's name. Take genuine interest. The V is visualize, which is kind of fun, where you take the person's name and you turn it into a memorable picture. So if a person's name is Mark, for a split second, everyone, you can just imagine putting a check mark on Mark's forehead in the privacy of your own mind. You're not sharing this with moment, right? But if you tend to remember what you see, because a lot of people are better with faces, then try seeing what you want to remember. And so a person named Mike, imagine they're singing on a microphone, karaoke or something. If a person named Carol, they're singing Christmas Carol. If a person named Mary, they're carrying 2 lambs, you know, for Mary had a little lamb. Whatever it is, it's silly and childish, but children are such fast learners, right? And they're willing to play and use their imagination. And it helps you to overcome what I call the 6-second syndrome. Somebody tells you their name, you have 6 seconds to do something with that name, otherwise it's gone. Right. But by trying to turn to saying it and using it and asking about it or visualizing it. And once you know the person's name, the check mark disappears. Right. It's just a means to an end to capture it so you don't lose it for those 6 seconds. And the E in suave is end. Always end the conversation saying goodbye with their name. Because if you could walk into a room of 20 strangers and leave saying goodbye to every single one of them by name, who are they all going to remember?
Yeah.
You, right? And that's an unbelievably like standout skill. So that'll make you absolutely unforgettable.
I had a friend actually, whenever he would let me go on the phone, he would say, "Bye, Mark." And I remember always being like, "Oh, it feels so nice." So thank you.
Yeah, it's a way. I mean, think about the emotion behind the name. It's probably one of the first words you learned how to write. And think about all the encouragement and love. And it's just, yeah, there's something special about names. So a nice reminder for everybody here is to get curious about people's names, and it means a lot to them, especially in remembering names. Like how are you, if you have a business or you have a relationship with a human being, how are you going to show you're going to care for them, their family, their future, their friends, their finances, their wellness, whatever you have to offer them, if you don't care enough just to remember their name, right? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And so I feel like having good memory is not just remembering facts, figures, foreign languages, but remembering people, remembering loved ones, remember times that, you know, I believe the life you live are lessons you teach. And I think we could be a good example for people around us of the limitless potential we all have.
Honestly, I'm left in awe and also desperately excited to do the 3-week course on reading, because I really want to perfect that, but also get the expanded edition of Limitless and that extra section that you talked about on momentum on top of the brain types. Yeah.
We talk about nootropics in there. We talk about AI to enhance your HI, your human intelligence, and so much more to be able to accelerate our lives. So it has all of the speed reading, memory, how to listen, how to focus, how to get into flow states, how to change your habits, all the best brain foods. You know, we show you how to memorize them. It's a labor of love. But I really want to thank you, Mark, for having me on, you know, especially this episode. It means a lot.
Yeah. Honestly, it's so exciting to have you here for this, because the upgrade to our minds is the upgrade to our lives.
Yeah. And then it could help people learn for the next 400, you know, put these things into play. It'll help everyone to focus, remember, and learn everything to come. Cause I really believe everyone, especially if you're still listening to this at the end, that you're a special individual. You've self-selected, you're investing in yourself. And I believe there's a version of you that's literally patiently waiting. And the goal is we just show up every single day until we're introduced. So keep showing up for yourself, everyone.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being here. And we'll make sure we put in the show notes all the links that you've shared. But for the people who want to get there right now, who are listening or watching, where can they find more of you?
Yeah. The brain quiz at mybrainanimal.com. You can take that while it's available. The book you can get anywhere. The book's called Limitless. It's in 40 languages, and it's anywhere books are sold. And I would love to connect on social media. I'm at Jim Kwik, KWIK, wherever. I don't know, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, any of that stuff. It's all good. But, you know, to stay updated to the latest passions and projects.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it, Jim.
Mark, you're the best.